Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today, I'm in the busy and beautiful garden of nurseryman and grower Claire Austin, who has been growing plants commercially for over 40 years. Claire is the daughter of rose breeder David Austin and worked for him in 1980 and then started on her own in 1999. She is a council member of the RHS. Claire, it's lovely to be here. I remember before this amazing view, isn't it? But now you've added this little gazebo. And so you can sit up on the top of the hill, look down over thousands of herbaceous plants, and then out to the wider landscape, which is picture box, isn't it?
Even better with a glass of wine when the sun goes down.
It is west facing, is it?
Yeah. If the sun actually goes down, yes, west there, north there, sorry, south there, north there. So we're, you know, it goes all the way, we can look all the way round, just about.
And I see we've got a friend who's come to say hello. This is a chicken.
Two of them.
Two of them. Oh, right. And she's obviously free range. Yes.
Very free range, although totally hopeless when it comes to knowing where to lay eggs.
Oh, she just hides them. Oh, that's a nightmare.
Pathetic.
Yes. So just to canter through your growing up and your background. So I remember that after school you were very artistic, because I always remember going to your house when you were probably six or seven, and your kitchen, the bowling green, was covered with your mother's paintings, your paintings. It was like wall to wall illustrations all over the walls. You don't remember that? I remember seeing that.
No.
I do, and I remember because your mother was always so arty, wasn't she? She always had a fag hanging out of her mouth, and she was always sculpting some amazing bear or something.
She's a true artist. She painted to the day she died, really.
Yeah.
It was absolutely amazing, yeah.
And we weren't surprised when she went to Wolverhampton Art School, mm-hmm. didn't she? When she was in the tender 19s, 20s or mm-hmm. whatever. And then you followed in her footsteps, but you went to Bristol Art College.
I went to Bristol, and then my daughter went to Loughborough. So there's three generations, and I have to admit that Ellen's the only one who's made any money.
And what does Ellen do now? What does she party?
She's doing, she has a small business. She does pattern design.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
But she is about to branch out. That's her border.
Oh, I see. So with your mother, and she's obviously got strong artistic side in her, but and your father, I reckoned he had a scientific side to him too, didn't he? But he had the artistic side, do you think? Which was he mainly, artistic or scientist-y?
Artistic.
Because he always seemed quite dreamy,
He wrote poetry.
Yes, and he always, for a highly successful, to develop a highly successful business, as he did.
But he was severely dyslexic. So that was the key to the way he survived or didn't survive life, was actually his dyslexia. It really hindered him in the early years. But it was definitely, he was creative in a very diverse way.
I suppose the dyslexia is probably the key, isn't it? Because he, to develop such a successful business, and he wasn't this sort of driven businessman in a suit, was he?
My brother did that, not my father.
Your brother did that.
I'm dyslexic as well. So yes. We all have this horrible trait.
Yeah, and I think we have on our side, because both my kids have, and I think maybe because I never learnt my tables or anything like that.
No. It's inherited. Absolutely inherited.
But we never gave it a name. But
it's dyslexia.
So you never thought, well, I do remember when you started off, your horticultural business, I remember you illustrated the catalogue, didn't you, with beautiful pen and ink drawings, is that right?
That was 40 years ago.
I remember them.
That was
Claire.
So long, I've still got them all, yeah.
Yeah, they're lovely.
Yeah, yeah. It's before you could afford colour printing.
Yes, and
so
they worked
them.
Very well, but I have to say, for your wonderful herbaceous business, your photographs and your website are fabulous, aren't they? If ever I'm looking up a plant, mm-hmm. I go straight on, particularly perennial, go straight on to Clewiston Hardy Plants, and up come these wonderful illustrations. And also you've got a way with words, as your father did have, didn't you? Because your plant descriptions, it sounds like you've just taken your hands out of the soil and you've repotted the persicare or whatever it is you're talking about. And it is sort of thoroughly down-to-earth text, but it tells you what it is in a way that's lovely to assimilate.
A lot of the way I learned to write about plants were due to a very eminent plantsman called Graham Thomas, who's a good friend of my father's, and I used to read his books. He also used to read my text and correct it, but he was amazing, the plantsman. The way he wrote about plants was totally honestly, to the point where their fault was included as well.
Which I think is
really
important part. But I suppose the Graham Thomas now, the name is synonymous with the yellow rose that your father bred and named after him. And he always credited Graham Thomas as really helping develop his interest in old shrub roses.
Well, he specialised in old roses.
Yes, part of it. Your Clare rose, people might know of you through the Clare rose. Mm-hmm. And that is the best white rose.
In my opinion, yeah. Never gets black spot.
And when it was bred and they were going to name, or your father was going to name a rose after you, did you choose the white rose for your purity?
No. It was the third one.
The third one?
Third named one. The other two were lousy. So right. Eventually he named that one for me, and he did announce at the time, the father said, he said, I've just named a rose for you. It's virgin white, and laughed.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, 50.
But he'd always wanted to breed what we all love, a good white disease-free rose.
It's cream, really. It's on the edge of cream.
But then when it comes out and opens, it's more white, I would definitely say. Oh, right. Looking down there, yours does look cream, but mine looks whiter.
It's probably the heat. Compared to here, we are in very wet Wales, so in the west of Britain.
Yes.
And things do change, so you get a different vision of them, yeah.
And one thing that I always love about your mother, apart from her old red Land Rover that I remember her zooming round the roads on, is that she did a sculpture of my father when he was a young lad, because my father had met my mother. My father came from quite a poor background, and they used to say he dragged himself up by his bootlaces. And there's this sculpture, which I've now got, and it looks to me a bit like a Henry Moore, and he's actually on the wall, bending down, dragging himself up by his shoelaces. And it's so good. Did you ever see it?
No.
Have you got any of your mother's sculptures here?
Yeah, there are a few of them. They're floating around in corners, so they are around the place. But we put them out of the way because we were doing alterations to the garden, so we need to put them back in again at some point. Just haven't done it yet.
So when you started developing this garden, when did you move here?
About 15 years ago.
15 years ago, and it was a house that your mother built.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's describe the house to me.
Oh, it's a timber framed, it's a kit house. It was originally designed by Border Oak, and I think it was one of their first sort of houses, built in 1997. Of course, it was built in the landscape, and so, you know, it's a beautiful house, but we didn't really want, my father didn't want to live in it, so we bought it off him, so yeah, and then developed the garden afterwards. No garden here at the time.
So when you say a kit house, it literally came in bits and
they put it somewhere. I don't remember it, to be honest. Mm. I was involved in doing other things at the time. But, yeah.
And so it's got the all green oak throughout it, and the roof is made of
slate roof,
isn't it? Yeah. And the rendered bits in between are a lovely sort of faded yellow ochre, would you say, parchmenty colour?
Yes, I think so, yes. Mm. Yes.
And it does sit very happily into the clump of trees on the wing over there. Yeah. And then it was built in this position because of the view.
Yes, well, the trees weren't there at the time. They've been planted since then.
Yes.
But it was chosen to be out of the wind, although the wind does come this way. And, yeah, it's... It was very much chosen to be within the view. Yeah.
And now you use it to show off your fabulous range of perennials. So you've terraced it.
Yes, the only way to do it is it's sloping.
Yeah. And each terrace looks about a metre higher than the terrace down below it.
There's only one terrace, really, because the next just slopes down, which actually aids drainage, thankfully.
Yeah.
Which is what you need. Unfortunately, the bottom bits do get wetter than I'd like them to be, but then it can grow all sorts of things like sambucas and things that don't mind wet.
Mm. And now the rain is pouring down as I'm sitting in this lovely little green oak gazebo. And I can see, you can see the mist rolling in, can't you, over the hill over there.
Tends to come from the west, from the coast.
Yeah, it is, actually. It is rolling
on. Yeah, we're about 45 minutes from Mid-Wales coast. So it just comes drifting in, and the wind. And then you'll often find it's just full of rainbows. So it's absolutely lovely. It's beautiful in that aspect. Mm.
So is it moderated, the climate, by the coast? It is quite mild. Would you get minus, what would you get in the coldest winter you've ever had?
Oh, you could get minus 12, minus whatever, easily, really? Yes. But, I mean, it certainly is not sheltered, because we are in the middle of the country. So it's it can get quite cold, definitely. But it does have high rainfall.
So I can see, since I last came, you've extended your plant beds massively. Mm. So your nursery is just a little bit down the lane, yeah, as it were. Mm. And most of you grow a massive range of herbaceous perennials. Yeah. But you are known for your irises and your peonies originally. Is that correct?
No, it was always, what happened with the collection was my father didn't think his roses were going to make any money or anything. So as any good farmer would do, he diversified, having been a farmer previously. And so he bought in a good range of irises and peonies from America and some from the UK.
Why were they from America particularly? Because they were new varieties weren't growing over here.
There were no other. I mean, even now it's very difficult that UK irises and there's no UK peonies. They all came from the States.
That was quite an interesting move, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To find source really unusual ones.
He wanted what he called florist flowers. So he liked big flowers that had a wide range to have a look at, to choose from. So yeah, but he also did have perennials. He bought in perennials from Sunningdale Nurseries when they were closing down in Surrey and various other places. So there was always a range of perennials. But he started only for 2 years. With the irises and peonies. He bought them in 1980, and in 1983 he wanted to plough them in. So
Why was that such a
Because he needed
decision.
The land for the roses.
Oh, I see. So the roses
then
wasn't
did
interested,
better. Yes.
I see.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Come Chelsea, the first Chelsea or second one they did, roses went big time. So I come back from living in Tanzania at the time. So my husband chose to look after the perennials. That's what we did.
So he went from being a quantity surveyor, I seem to remember,
that's right.
Right, to growing perennials.
Yes, yeah.
Whoa,
briefly.
That is some move,
yes,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And you were fully on board, or were you still...
Oh, totally, yes, yeah. No, I did. I did it right from the beginning, everything with the roses. You know, my apprenticeship was 15 years at the roses, really. And then after that, sort of branched off and started doing things myself. But even within that period, I was doing the catalogues. And I started writing books, so, you know, it's...
The slow, gradual...
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
You still have a passion for roses, presumably.
No, I have no passion for roses at all.
Really? Now, that is because... I noticed, actually, apart from Claire Austin down there...
Oh, I was in... My father insisted I had a few at the bottom of the garden, so there are a few down there. But to be absolutely honest, if I would choose a rose, it would be a species or a very simple single-flowered rose would be my choice. But no, I don't really have a passion. I have no passion for roses. I've always, for 40 years, been ingrained in perennials. And although I know about roses, I can tell you, I mean, I have no more passion for a rose than I do an orchid.
And do you think it's because you were immersed in them as
no,
much of your
I
life?
Just, I love perennials because of the variety, from the minute they emerge from the ground to the minute they die back in autumn, there is something different about them. A rose is a load of sticks that has some leaves and then some flowers and a lot of prickles.
Yes.
And they do have beautiful scent, but there's an awful lot of perennials that have equally as much scent. But the thing about perennials is you've got the fabulous leaves, you've got the range of shape of leaves, the colour, the shape of the flowers, the depth, the range of colours. And I just think perennials are essential. I mean, that has been the trend in the last 30 years anyway with the prairie planting of Piet Dordorff and Tom Stuart Smith. It's probably a little bit overdone now, but no, it's I still think they are the most versatile of all plants you can grow.
No, oh, that is fascinating. I hadn't realised you were not a rose fan. How about that? And with that wonderful white rose. When you moved here, so you moved the nursery three times and you came here, and this is much heavier soil than you were used to.
Yeah, it's actually proved to be quite interesting. I can actually grow a wider range of plants because where we were before, the previous two nurseries were sand, red sand, so very, very well drained, whereas here it's a clay loam, and although unfortunately the bearded irises don't necessarily grow as well, I'm trying to breed them and choose ones that will grow on our sort of soil, which I'm having a certain success with, but the peonies just grow fantastically because they love that heavy soil. And not only that, I can grow woodland plants, which I could never grow before. I've discovered things like Nyptophoria grow here, South African red hot pokers, they grow beautifully here. Crocosmias, South African again, grow beautifully in this soil. And it's amazing what you can grow in this soil.
It's interesting you say crocosmia because they are very versatile. So I'm the reverse to you. I'm very dry and we have far less rain than you do. So we are desert some years in terms of rainfall. Mm. Technically we are desert. Crocosmia grow well, peonies also grow well. So both those are very versatile.
Yeah.
And I think a lot are Nyptophoria. Bogus are absolutely fine with me too. They'll get, you know, quite easily. So there are a lot of plants that are very wide, but I think a few people do get caught out, don't they? Because certain ones you could grow very well and I would struggle well with, and vice versa.
Yes. I can't, there are certain grasses. Are there Penicetum,
yeah.
I can't grow that. That'll disappear because it's too wet. We're too wet.
Yeah.
So it depends. If a plant doesn't like the rainfall, you lose it. So and that has been the great issue with the one or two that I've not succeeded with. But generally, most plants will succeed.
Yeah.
In this soil.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And what about the Persicaria? So you've got quite a few Persicaria here.
So it was briefly one of my passions. But then
briefly, you've gone out of love.
Well,
with
it's
them.
No, I haven't gone out with love them at all, but there's so many of them are so similar. But what I tend to do is if I see something I really like, I will collect as many of that plant as possible, see how it grows, I photograph it, write about it, and then decide, well, okay, that's another red one. Oh, that's another pink one. So you need to, when you're selling to people, you want to give them the best of a range of plants. So that is part of my aim.
Because it is confusing, isn't it? Because now there must be
40
plus.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And so when you're looking at them, it's a bit like they did a thing with jams, didn't they? That there's the firm that makes hundreds of different varieties of jams, and they find that it actually turns people off.
Yes.
Because you so can't
you
decide.
Can't select
you want
them.
10 or none.
Yeah.
And whereas with washing powders, they used to dominate the market by having, you know, whatever they were, lever buds would have 10. But it doesn't work that way.
No,
with
it doesn't.
And that is useful to know because with plant breeding, they will release a new plant with plant breeders' rights. So they'll give a massive advertising campaign about it. And actually, it has only just been launched, so we don't really know how it does. People buy it thinking it's going to be the best next thing, and it's not always.
The classic one for me, which is a very, very popular plant, is Salvia amistad. I cannot grow the thing. It really doesn't grow. Whereas in London, I've seen it 6 foot high in a pot, where it's warm. It needs really, because of the where it comes from, and that's the thing, you have to look at where plants come from, because they're South American. They just, any of those salvias, in fact, most salvias, apart from a couple, I have difficulty with because of the water content. And I've got a couple of species which grow well. One's called glutinosa, a rather indistinct yellow one, but it does grow to 4 foot high and it's really hardy. And then I've got another one down the bottom, which is a red one. Otherwise, all used to, they're very popular. I have difficulty here.
You must be exceptionally wet then, because amistad is, I always thought, was that anyone could go. So you put me right on that. But if you go to Woolerton Old Hall, that would be much drier.
It's sand.
Sand. And they grow amazing salvias. They have a wonderful relationship.
I think they do renew them as well, though.
Yes, they probably propagate them up a lot.
Yeah, you need to do that in case.
Oh, right. That is interesting, because they are hugely popular. But do you like Amistad generally? If you could work, would you work?
If it grew to the glamour I've seen it in a London pot, yes. But we just can't grow it, so I have to ignore it.
Mm. The pink Amistad, which came out, was that a couple of years back? Mm. I lost some of that last year. And that was exceptionally wet last year.
I think you'll find with a lot of bream, like echinaceas, which are the sneezeweed, there are hundreds of the things. But because most of the crosses between two different species, a yellow one and the pink one, neither of which is particularly hardy, you're likely to lose most of them.
Echinacea, I just give up with those.
No, they're almost annuals.
Yeah, and they do look wonderful on centrefolds.
Fabulous.
But I would never bother with them because I would have to propagate them every year.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, sadly. So what about the new Persicaria that you have that's smaller? Because a lot of people love Persicarias because they do flower for possibly the longest of many perennials.
Yes, and they're absolutely loved by bees and anything flying. Honeybees particularly love it.
Yeah.
Yes, I've got, there are several smaller ones, but the one that I found in the garden is a cross between, I think, Persicaria Invalithe and Persicaria Fat Domino. Fat Domino is not a vigorous one, but it's a tall one.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good plant.
Lovely pink, beautiful pink. Yeah. I've got both
red,
of those.
Red, it's a red.
Well, a pinky red,
yes,
I would
is.
Say.
It's
not
sort of,
a orangey red.
No,
yeah,
that's right. So it's a cross between the two, and it does, I mean, at the moment, it's sort of about, what would you say, about 60 to 75 centimetres high. Although I have to admit, I've put one round the corner and this year it has grown to 90, which is slightly annoying.
Oh, but right. But it has been exceptionally wet.
Yes, it has, yeah. Yes.
So that's interesting. So you think it's a seedling cross? Crossed itself?
Oh, and most garden plants are.
Yeah, but how do you know it's those two?
Because they were between the two.
Oh, I see, okay. But in belief, I do find a bit too steady. It's
yes.
too slow, too small, I
yes.
find.
Yeah.
I can lose it.
Yeah.
And I didn't think you could lose a Persicaria.
You can do if it's too dry.
Well, that's obviously what happened with me.
They
but
do
mostly,
like moisture.
Well, you say that, but most of them, Fat Domino and Co.
That's interesting, yeah.
Are fine on my dry as dust soil.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm,
yeah.
I think they're a real go-to plant, to be honest.
I agree.
So you've also branched out, haven't you? Well, first of all, Chelsea. So you did exhibit quite a bit at Chelsea. I've seen your lovely peonies and iris at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done all perennials? You haven't, have you? You've just done
Yes, we've done a mixture of both. I think it's not something that the shows department at the Chelsea Flower Show actually want. They want somebody to, they want the wow plants. So that's why I got known for the peonies and irises, because they always, over the last, whatever it is, 30 years I've exhibited on and off, they've always wanted the wow plants. And of course, peonies and irises do show at the best time in May. So
yes.
that is a prime, or certain early flowering peonies with us. So that's fine. That's our national collection. So that's fine.
Yeah. And so I didn't realise you had a national collection.
Two national collections, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
I've had them for years.
Just so anybody doesn't know what a national collection is.
Plant Heritage it's under now.
The Plant Heritage. And what it is you have a wide range and they're all labelled.
Well, you can choose to grow one. You have to have three of each plant, technically.
Yeah.
And it has to be representative of the species you've chosen. So for instance, our peony collection is what they call hybrid peonies, which are a cross of species. So they're the early flowering, May flowering peonies. They're usually single, vivid colours or beautiful yellow. It's the only one where you get a yellow apart from the tree peonies.
You mean the I2 hybrids are you talking
about? No, they're called hybrid peonies.
Right,
yes.
Okay.
They're herbaceous.
Yes, right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's the one you've got the national collection of. And
yeah.
how many different
we've just gone and submitted it. I think there's about 80, something like that.
Whoa.
Yes,
so
I suppose.
Looking after those is quite something.
It's a part of a field crop, so it's fine. We have a horticultural collection, yeah.
Right.
We're lifting it at the moment with a digger, but we've stopped because of the rain.
Yes. And are all labelled, obviously.
Oh, yes.
And anyone can come and visit.
You
them.
Have
is
to, well,
right
come
you?
When we open. Or
when
yeah,
you,
yeah
exactly.
Which we open in June, yeah.
Wow. And what about the I2 hybrids then? Because of peonies, because those are very popular now. And I remember you gave me Julia Rose.
Ah, right.
You
yeah.
came for a big birthday with yeah. me, which was really nice. Yeah. And you told me next year it'll be a metre wide. You yeah. bought me the nice, generous mm. little clump. And it was. It yeah. was a metre square.
They're excellent. Yeah. The intersectional hybrids, you can call them Itos after the gentleman who actually invented them. But
Japanese gentleman.
Yeah, he died. Yeah. I've forgotten his Christian name. Ito. He wanted to cross have a herbaceous peony that these die back every year that had yellow flowers, and the only way to do it was to cross a tree peony with a herbaceous, because all tree peonies were only the ones that had yellow flowers. So there are a lot of different intersectionals now, and there's a lot. I grow them in a long border, a wide border, and you wouldn't notice them now because they sort of looked indistinctive. But the border with the aster in down there has about 8 or 9 different intersectionals, and they're brilliant because the foliage just drops off. You get no mess with them. The flowers are big and glamorous, and they're sterile as well, which is the only thing about them. So you can't ever do crosses or anything with them. But they are amazing. They're amazing.
Mm.
Very easy to grow.
Yeah, no, I've been thrilled with Julia Rose. She's you know, really grown beautifully in my dry soil.
Actually, I do grow them in the shade as well, semi-shade, on the north side of that hedge down there, which is quite dry.
Yes.
I've got about 6 or 8 of them down there.
And how do you find they perform down there?
Just as well as anywhere else.
Yeah, I've got
part shade, no problem.
Herbaceous peonies in the shade, which you shouldn't have technically do, but they do okay.
Well, in China, they grow them in the shade.
They That's probably they have more from. Sunlight, do they? There?
They grow them under trees, mm. yes.
But so they are brighter climatically.
Possibly, no, possibly. Not in April. I can tell you, it's really
oh, right.
really wet in April, very dull in April when I went years yeah. ago. But yes, it's
wow.
a, yeah.
So you also branched out about 5 or 6 years ago, did you, pre-COVID, and you bought a pub?
Yes, well, that is now sort of rented to a tenant, so we're really pleased by that. With COVID, we just got so wrapped up in it, and it such a busy time, it sort of drifted off into not being able to be suitable for what we wanted to do with it. So but that's now just a part of a tenant's business now, which I'm pleased about.
Right, okay. But I've noticed on your website, you branched out into selling other things as well. It's not just plants.
Yes.
You can buy mugs and
yeah,
trays.
Yeah,
and
that's something, again, that was a leftover from the pub where we had a gift shop. And we're probably going to sort of lessen that soon. So, yeah, it's more the... Our major part, 94% of the business is general A to Z perennials. And that's what we sell most of.
Yeah, and mainly by mail order.
All by mail order.
All by mail order. So they go out in a 9-centimetre pot.
Or a 1 or 2, yeah. depending on what we've got, yeah.
And obviously with COVID... all the garden centres and things were shut down, and nurseries, and so then your business absolutely
it did boom. It
boom.
Was but in common with a lot of other mail order, which was great. It was really good. It was great for the industry, not necessarily great for garden centres, but great for the industry. Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people who previously did have their shop window at Chelsea and places like that found that they could survive perfectly well online.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when you look at the presentation of all your plants online, and it's perfect, isn't it? It's really good thing. So it's worked really in favour. And I bet people come and say, will you design me a border, Claire?
Thankfully not. They tend to come and go, wow. That's about it. But we open in June. So we open in June just for the, usually for the peonies and irises. Next year we won't. We'll be opening in July because I'm about to, this year what has happened is, because it was so wet, the plants grew so big.
Yes.
And they've just collapsed. And certain weeds have got in between. So I want to lift that, these four borders that we're sitting in front of. As they are about, the perennials are about 12 years. They've been in there for about 12 years. So I need to now take them out. And I do let a lot of self-seeding, partly so I can find new plants, but partly because I enjoy the wilderness of what's going to come up. But, you know, it's that's what I'm going to do.
I have to say, they look, well, you say they've collapsed, but in this rain, yes. they look enchanting, don't they? They really do. Mm. But will you have divided those in the 12 years, the clumps of certain things, or have they all just been put in and left for 12 years?
They've just been...
Yeah. Really? So all is. You see, I'm very bad at dividing my perennials, I have to say.
I never do it.
You never do?
Never divide.
God, Claire, that's music to my ears. But don't you get these donuts? Just for anyone who doesn't know with a herbaceous perennial, basically it grows from the inside and it spreads out. And you can get these donuts where you get the live plants around the edge and these dead bits in the middle. So technically you're meant to dig up the clump, get out a big bread knife.
The only plant, well, the only plant it's done it with is actually a grass. And it's a millennia sitting down there. And it's got a hole in the middle the cat loves.
And that's the cat that's made it there.
No, it just loves the hole in the middle. It sits in there. But no, and they don't tend to. What I found in our soil is they drift. So as in nature, they drift and find their own way. So a lot of perennials will just wind their way around, especially the ones at the bottom. And or they'll just die out. Which is often the case. You should really lift them to revive the plants, especially asters. Hmm. Asters are classic, really. Yes. Give them vigour again.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose that's a very good point. And that's probably why I don't have many asters. but the whole thing about ecology and the ecosystem now, and we were at NEP the other day, and they've planted many different varieties in their wall garden. Mm. To increase the insect diversity. But I would have thought with this sort of garden, I don't know how many different species you've got in this garden, which must be about, I would say, 30 metres times 30 metres on the terrace, down the hillside. You must have maybe 100 different species or more.
Oh, easily, yes. Yeah, I'm never quite sure. The wildlife, though, this not so much this year because of the rain.
Yeah.
We tend to, the only sort of butterfly we have is it the wood brown, little brown speckly one. But the bees in a normal year, the bees and butterflies and toads and lizards and everything else that live in it is incredible.
Yeah.
Because I don't disturb it. I don't mulch it. I don't have any bark on it, which I disagree with bark personally, because I don't think it's natural for a garden. I find it very, it flattens the soil, and the breakdown just adds things to the grass, the soil you don't want.
That's interesting. That is the most controversial thing I've ever heard you say, Ms. Austin. really. But do you cut these back? Or when do you cut them
back?
We
cut them back in the autumn. In the spring.
In the spring. So then do you re-add the tops to the bottom?
Nope.
You just take it all off?
Take it all off, yes.
So you're denuding it all the time?
Well, often what we have done is my husband Rick has got a strimmer and just strims it.
Yeah.
And that works very well. And then I do take the tops off.
Rake them off.
Yes,
lightly,
because otherwise you just have such a thicket.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So I do, because maybe it's the difference in soil. You see, my very thin soil, which is basically a crew yard, I will be like the pit pony every autumn through the winter. I'll be shoving on bark mulch, ray mule, green waste, any organic matter I can get my hands on for free. And I'll be banging it on, and I love it.
Yes, yes. Whereas I don't need to do with this.
Because you've got rich, clay natural soil. Yeah. And your perennials would be fine on a far less rich soil.
Well, this is the beauty of perennials, is they will grow in almost anything because they are effectively a wild plant. A lot of them are wild.
Yeah.
They're not hybridised. They don't come from rich places. They come from verges. They come from, well, meadows where it's poor. That is the beauty of a perennial, most perennials. It is their location.
I'm just looking at a border that's behind us against the gable end. And I think this has got an interesting story about it, hasn't it?
Oh, the border?
Yes.
Yes, this is one. I've got five little borders that all designed my daughter. Ellie, who's planning a new business, which is yet to be launched, but hopefully will turn out next year.
Can you tell us a bit about it? Can we get a sneak preview? Because this border looks very neat. It's got a mixture of plants, mainly herbaceous.
And green.
So they're hydrangeas.
It gives you an idea. It's actually for more town dwellers, really, and starter gardens, people who don't know what to do with the garden. But that is the idea, is to give people a selection of plants which will grow. This particular one is obviously about texture. So it's a lovely border, actually. It's really nice.
And so it's probably about 600 mil wide, two foot wide.
Yes.
And what are they at the end? Are they hydrangeas?
Hydrangeas down there. No, actually, that's angelica.
Oh my God! So what? It, so you,
it's grown like mad. It hasn't flowered yet. No.
Oh wow.
No, but it's full of hellebores and it's this really for a shady border because you've got brunnera and ferns and heucheras and hellebores at the back somewhere. It'll probably have to be moved out. I think it's a little bit squashed, but that's for the first year.
That's amazing. So she'll sort of sell out this roll-out border.
Hopefully, yes.
Mm. And she's doing one for different situations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, they're all for people. Yes, they are. That's what it's for different situations.
North, south.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's a very nice idea. Yeah. So she's got the genes.
Yes.
The art and the growing. Yes. The combination.
Luckily her husband is, he's a, I would say project manager. I never quite know what Chris's title is. He's a graphic designer, basically. So he's very excellent at putting ideas together. So they work very well together.
Ah, fascinating. Gosh, what is that bird there? The thunder. It's so atmospheric here, isn't it? As the mist rolls in off the hill, the thunder's all around us. I'm just waiting for sheet lightning to get to us. But tell me what you're now on the council member for the RHS, the Royal Horticultural Society. So what are you bringing to, how are you going to get the young in there? Because that's their big thing, isn't it? I remember the guy who edits The Garden, the magazine. The average age of the RHS member is 65 or something.
It's now 55.
So you've done something.
Something. Someone's done something.
So how did that happen? That
but
is
that is
good.
Gardening. That's what happens with gardening. I mean, your average gardener is A, a woman, and B, is older when you've got time and got rid of the children. So, I mean, that's where you have time to do something.
But it's all changed now, isn't it? Because now people are working from home. And
yes, there is a lot more. Interest in that, but it's joining a society. I mean, effectively, it's I've been on it a year, and it's great. We've just had a meeting. We talked about flower shows. We talked about peat and peat free. We talked about all sorts of things that affect the society and the members, and hopefully the wider herbaceous. The wider gardening public. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, great! So you're going to shape horticulture for all.
Not
of
just
us.
Me, but my other team members, of which there are quite a few.
Yes. Oh, well done. That's most impressive. I'd like to bring my guest a little present. And so I bought you, I don't know what you'll think of this, Claire, at all. But I bought you. I was at the Henry Moore Sculpture Gallery earlier on this week.
Yeah.
We were recording a programme there. And I actually have not brought you a Henry Moore to sit in the middle of your borders, sadly. But I have brought you some coffee. He's got a very special brand of coffee, which he used to invigorate and enliven himself.
Really?
His company.
How fascinating.
So I brought you some Henry Moore fresh coffee beans.
Fabulous. I have a coffee grinder, so that's fine.
But thank you very much.
Brilliant.
I am
thank
most
you.
Impressed with this lovely bit of Wales. We're just in Wales, aren't we?
We are just a mile.
Yeah, and it's just so lovely. And I think these herbaceous look... You told me it wasn't looking good. But I
they're going very autumnal, but then again, what do you expect? The time of year.
Exactly. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you.